You're tuned to Focus on Campus, a weekly show which highlights faculty, staff, and students here at the University of Texas at El Paso. Good morning, I'm Louis Sines, your host for Focus on Campus, and joining us today is a good friend of the station's, Norm Garrett. Norm helps us during Fund Drive, and he visits with us throughout the year. And right now, he's teaching a class with the OLLI program, which those of you who remember used to be called the Center for Lifelong Learning. And he's teaching a class called Free Blacks and Fugitive Slaves in Texas and the Southwest. Norm, thank you very much for joining us.
Well, thank you for welcoming me this morning, Louis.
And, you know, you and I talked about this about a year ago, I guess, during Fund Drive, and that we were going to talk about this. And you said that you had gone in there and told them that you could talk to them for maybe an hour for one of the classes. And with all the information that you had, they said, you're teaching a class. And
exactly.
So the title is just incredible, Free Blacks and Fugitive Slaves in Texas and the Southwest. Tell us, first of all, how you got interested in this topic. You know, we need to tell our audience you are African-American.
Yes.
But you have lived in Mexico before. You're very fluent in Spanish, and you love music. You love public radio, you love to teach, and you love research and books. And because of this topic that you chose, there is no specific book. It's all a lot of your research and a lot of the stuff that you've done.
Yes, sir. Well, initially, while living in Mexico City, I ran across a couple of articles, one in the Miami Herald and another one in a periodical called Inside Mexico. The Miami Herald, the title was The Little Unknown Southern Underground Railroad. I'll go, okay, I've got to read this. What's this all about? And it was about how people know, and here in the U.S., we know a lot about the Northern Underground Railroad that followed the North Star to Canada. But very few people know about the thousands of African slaves or fugitive slaves who fled and went south to Mexico. And not just Mexico. Mexico was a jumping off point. Some of them jumped off and actually went to the Bahamas, some of the Caribbean islands. And the reason they knew this is in doing their research, they traced black Indians, the black Seminoles, who lived in Florida and in some parts of the Southwest. This was what was great. I always thought the Seminoles only lived in Florida, but they traced themselves back to the Southwest, areas in the South. They were part of the marauders that would come out of the Chihuahuan Mountains and cross the river and do some of the raids, you know. But they traced these individuals back to, from the Bahamas back to Florida. We have records, after doing some of the research, we have records from the early 1600s under Spain where the governor of one of the Florida cities is making notes that he's noticed these Negroes coming in from the English colonies, okay, and they're seeking refuge in the Spanish colonies, you know. So I really got intrigued by this, and the article in the magazine Inside Mexico dealt with what they called Afro-Mexicans. Now, the guiding assumption, as the article starts off, tells you that the assumption is that all these Afro-Mexicans or Mexicans of African descent are leftover remnant from the Spanish and the Portuguese. But what they've discovered in going into these actual little villages and pueblos is most of the people trace themselves back to individuals who ran from the north.
When you talk to other African-Americans from here in the United States and you tell them about the Afro-Mexicans or the fact that there were a lot of fugitive slaves and free slaves who emigrated to Mexico and the Southwest, what is their reaction to this? And I would imagine, especially for people who live in the South, where traditionally we assume a lot of African Americans lived in the early part of the century, early 19th century, and the Civil War broke out, a majority of them were in the South. And so how do they react to that?
Well, usually with surprise and in some ways disbelief, because, you know, again, as we've been taught history, we've been taught North Star, everything went north, freedom's in the north. You know, we hear a story of Frederick Douglass, he went north, you know. And so there's this myth about the South. There's this myth about the South that we get, that, you know, slaves that were sold south were punished. It was a horrible place. It was like the gates of hell, okay? And so this is what permeates the history, and this is what permeates most of our thinking. So when you tell these individuals, number one, that there are blacks in Mexico, because there ain't nothing down there but Mexicans, you know? Well, it's a very metropolitan experience. However, there's specific groups that are homogeneous. These Afro-Mexicans are homogeneous. They can all trace themselves back to one or two prodigies, people who came before them, you know. I'll give you an example. I tell them stories about this individual who founded an area called Playa Ventura. Playa Ventura, Senor Ventura, that's the name he took when he came from the north, okay? But he actually called himself, and this is the part of the legend that really intrigued me, he calls himself the devil from the north, okay? He comes into this area. He marries about five different women. He has children by these women. And when you go into this area, most of the people look alike. It's almost like going to Ethiopia or somewhere where there's this very homogeneous depiction as far as their faces and their body structures and everything. And they're very similar. Well, you find these stories in these colonies all over Mexico, in Veracruz, in Guerrero, in Sinaloa. Then that leads you to, okay, well, how do they get there? Well, you have the Spanish, you know, setting the laws that, hey, if you cross over into Spanish soil, you're free. Then when Texas becomes Mexico, Mexico says, you know, Guerrero says, hey, you know, we abolished slavery, and if you come here, you're free. People took that to heart. It became so outrageous that the slave owners in Texas had to set laws about communicating with between blacks and Mexicans. So early on, they're setting these barriers and boundaries. So again, history becomes very complicated and very nuanced in the process. So throughout Mexico, you find these leads. And what's interesting is one of the leads leads you to a guy by the name of Benjamin Lundy. We have schools here in El Paso named after Lundy, okay? For a long time, who is this guy Lundy? Well, he was an abolitionist. And he had a network of free blacks. And some of those free blacks owned slaves.
Just out of curiosity, nothing is much said in our history books about Mexico's stand on the Civil War and the role that they played. And I would imagine that a lot of the slaves might have fled to Mexico during the Civil War. And then, of course, a few years later, when Texas becomes free and becomes a state in 1836. Of course, you have a conflict there. And then we'll talk about the 1910 and the Mexican Revolution as well. But first, let's go back to the Civil War.
Okay. And during the Civil War, there's an interesting little caveat that goes on. And one of the authors out there that really does a good job with historic fiction, he deals with what happened to the plantations during the Civil War time when northern lines of trade are cut off and the men, the white men, are off fighting the war. And what's left is the women are left with their slaves to run these plantations. Well, they had to have money. They had to have a means to survive. So a lot of times they would harvest their cotton and they'd have their trusted slaves take it south to the Gulf of Mexico where your European ships would come into port, pick up those bales of cotton, do their trade, and move on. Well, you have stories that come about from that where this one instance where two slaves are given the charge to take a bale of cotton, several bales of cotton down to the Rio. They get down there. One takes a bale, throws it in the water, jumps on the bale, and uses it to ferry himself across the Rio to freedom. So you have little incidents like that that come out of nowhere. You say, okay, where's this history been? I mean, just to know that the people had this type of ingenuity, this type of imagination, and could sense and visualize their freedom. I have an excerpt from a former slave here in Texas where when the government did a project where they sent people through to record the experience of these slaves. And this guy, Felix Haywood, a former slave, he was 69 at the time of the interview, he said, sometimes people will come along and try to get us to run up north to freedom. We used to laugh at that. There was no reason to run north when all we had to do was walk south to freedom. Once we crossed the Rio Grande, in Mexico, you could be free. They didn't care what color you were, black, white, yellow, or blue as thunder.
We talked about the Civil War. We talked about when Texas was part of Mexico, and there were Tejanos and Texicans, and I would imagine there were a lot of African Americans as well. Immigration, though, always has a problem. And I'm not talking about immigration, but I'm talking about actually what I'm trying to deal with is racial tolerance. For some reason, we always have something that, you know, we're jealous because that other person is different. So what about Mexico's relationship with black people?
Well, and that's one of the myths that we're out to bust. My own personal experience in Mexico says that's a lie, that that's not true. If they're looking at you, they're looking at you because you're unique, you're different. But they also may think you're from Cuba or from somewhere else. You know, and once they discover you're from the U.S., another level of interest comes in. If you go back in history, look at the record, you'll see that, as Felix says here, that they embraced you in Mexico. Think about it. During the Mexican Revolution, after Mexico becomes its own country and it's free from Spain, you have this whole mix of people that are there that include these slaves that have been brought over by the Spanish, who have been set free from slavery, okay? But you also have the influx of those coming from the north. Not every case. To make a long story short, it's very complicated. But in the bigger picture, Mexico has fair embrace for most people that come to its shores, across its borders.
Now, what about American blacks? And when they encounter somebody from Mexico, and we're talking about culture here, are they going to say, well, you're forgetting your roots, you're forgetting your history?
In Mexico, things are done—
It's very different.
I'm sorry. But in Mexico, things are done by class more than color. You know, they may look at you and based on your title and how you dress. If I come in without, like I'm dressed now, without a tie or a suit on, they may consider me low class. So they may treat me low class. But if I come dressed appropriately for where I am, they're going to embrace me. Matter of fact, they're going to treat me and give me every opportunity. At least that's been my personal experience.
And what about American blacks treating a black person from Mexico?
We tend to buy into whatever the stereotypes that, and I'm making a general statement here. We tend to buy into most of the stereotypes. On a rare occasion, we won't. But 90% of the time, we're going to view Mexicans with the stereotype. Oh, you ride on donkeys, or you, all the little stereotypes that come out. We're going to deal with those things until if we give the person the opportunity to show us that, number one, they're just as intelligent as we are. Matter of fact, they're just as talented, if not more talented than we are.
One thing that's very international, it crosses barriers, no racial, no language, and that's music. So tell us about the influence that blacks have had on Mexican music or vice versa.
Oh, it's kind of a, think about it, black music is a combination of all the cultures that we experience when we come here to the shores of the U.S. I don't care where we were. If it was being played by someone, we adapted it. It adapted us. We became a part of the culture. When you go to Mexico, you see the same thing. You see the jazz. You see the blues. You see it all happening there. And they put their spin on it. And we've done the same thing. If you think about some of the, like the Dizzy Gillespies and the people like that, they've been influenced by Cuban and Mexican music, you know, or art. Some of our great writers, Richard Wright, spent a lot of time in Mexico. Langston Hughes spent a lot of time in Mexico. His father owned an electric company down there in Toluca, you know? And so you have this rich history that we never get to connect it with. When Langston Hughes does Ivanhoe Rivers, he's talking about his journey from New York to Mexico City. He's crossing all these rivers, and he's relating them to the African rivers and what have you.
Norm, this is the first time you've taught this class, and I'm sure that the popularity is going to increase. So for people who are interested in finding out more about this, is there a number that they can call at OLLI, or do you have a contact that they can call you to find out more about the information about this?
Sure.
If they'd like to be involved?
They can call me at 915-261-6822.
That number again is 261-6824. And for your information, I'm not sure if it's going to change next semester, but the class currently is offered on Mondays and Wednesdays at 1:30. And again, that's through the OLLI program here on campus, formerly known as the Center for Lifelong Learning. We've been visiting with Norm Garrett, who is currently teaching free blacks and fugitive slaves in Texas and the Southwest. Norm, as always, a pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you, Louis.
Focus on Campus is taped and produced at KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer and producer, Dennis Swoon. You've been tuned to Focus on Campus. I'm Louis Sines.